You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Good hot morning. Good Canada Day. I'm surprised to see anybody at church this morning. They have a parade in my hometown on the 1st of July every year, and they're not about to cancel it or move it. It's Wellington. They're not about to move much anymore. So they're canceled church. So there you are. Now, welcome.
I'm going to transmogrify the three words up there. If you're not familiar with them, we use them to say what we stand ourselves on, what we ground ourselves in, which is life in all its interconnections. And then we ask ourselves the question, how should we live in that web of interconnections? And we try to answer that with concept of love. And then since we know a lot about it and not enough about it, we share wisdom together. I was thinking to put that in terms of our country today, and to say that our wish, our hope, our deep desire and our commitment for our country is to be one that is grounded in life, in through all the aspects of life, and that includes issues of the environment and issues inequalities, all the realities of life, that we would be a country that looks them all in the face and takes them as real. And then the answer, how would we address these? We would want our country and all countries to address them with compassion and justice for everyone. And then since we're a relatively young country, and even the old countries lack wisdom in many areas, that we would grow in wisdom together as a country. As citizens. So I thought I would play, if you play it as an arrangement, people do not have to stand. So remain seated for a meditation about our country in terms of those ideas, and then we'll move into our sharing. So.
Thank you.
are three readings this morning. The first is written by Longfellow. Music is the universal language of mankind. Victor Hugo. Music expresses that which cannot be said and on which it is impossible to be silent. The third reading is Embrace the Music, which is a selection that that the choral group sang, and Scott's asked me not to sing it. Our journey has been filled with music. Every step, a gift of harmony. I tend to put emphasis on the wrong thing when I'm reading. A gift of harmony. Though the well-known path is often taken, the unfamiliar is the path for me. Though the road may be rough, the road may twist and turn, this is what I've come to learn. Embrace the music. Hold it in your heart. Sing the song that life has given you. Embrace the music. No matter where you are, let music be a part of all you do. Now, this is what I found the most rewarding. The mysteries and surprises every day, and the love that fill my life with music is from friendships that have blessed me on my way. Though the road may twist and turn, I know there's so much you will learn. Embrace the music. Look within yourself and be strong. Give what you've received and carry on. Embrace the music. Hold it in your heart. Sing the song that life has given you. Embrace the music. No matter where you are, let music be a part of all you do. Sing the song that life has given you. Hold it in your heart. Embrace the music. Thank you.
That song I wrote a long time ago, and I took it from something in one of Jack Spong's books, where he related, I think it was his college in Virginia, over a door of which it read, "Seek the truth, come whence it may, cost what it will." And we found from a librarian, I think later, that at the end of that statement is "lead where it might." But I didn't know that at the time I wrote the song. When we sang it, I believe, Debbie, you were there in Ottawa. Jack loved that that became a song from over his school. I mean, you'll notice if you've been here a long time, I altered a word there. And I did it on purpose just for a different sort of flavor. I don't think in the original I had put "seek for truth," capital T, as if there's only one and it comes from one institution or one type of thinking. But I think it was a small T. But I thought this time around I would put "seek for truth," not the truth. I was going to comment on the difference between "the" and "the," you know, before a vowel. But I'd probably get in trouble for that. Some things are very important to me. I'm sorry. I just have to make some adjustments. I'm the only one up here to do this. Okay. The topic is music. Because I love it, because I thought it would be a small bunch and just we could just share a bit. Music does so much for... Is my volume okay? I feel like it might not be. Betty, you're okay? You're happy, Betty? Okay, excellent. Music can inspire, music can comfort, music can challenge, music can inform, music can give expression to something that you wouldn't, as Victor Hugo said, you wouldn't know how to express any other way. It also, and there's people that don't like music at all. They don't like it a bit, not a bit. You know, I've met a few and I've referred them to a counselor. No. But they don't. They just don't. It doesn't resonate with them. But for many people, and music has accompanied us on many parts of our life journey. Lullabies to little children. The Happy Birthday. The song "Happy Birthday" is evidently the most recognized song in the English language. Everyone knows that. Some people hate that song. Or at least they don't want you to sing it to them on their birthday. Don't sing it. It comes from the second most recognized song in the English. Not "Happy Birthday" comes after that. "For He's a Jolly Good Fellow" is evidently the most second recognized piece of music in the world. And that idea that it was two sisters that wrote the song is one of those legendy kind of areas. We're not quite sure who wrote "Happy Birthday." These days in restaurants, you almost don't want to tell them it's your birthday because they will come up and do the clapping and they're singing a different kind of birthday song. But it's music that accompanies our life. My brother-in-law, as he just became my brother-in-law, and family wasn't quite sure whether we wanted him as a brother-in-law or not. We do now, but we weren't sure then. He was doing everything he could to impress the family. And he bought my mother a little record, a 45, of a happy birthday song for her birthday. And he was thinking that she would be very impressed with that because it was music and my mother. So we brought it to the house and we had one of those old lift up the lid Victrola record players. And he put it on. And because I know you well and I'm not embarrassed in front of you, I'm going to sing what it sounded like. My mother's name was Margaret. And because, I guess he'd put it in the back of his car, and the sun had gone on it. If you remember what happens to records when the sun goes. So, and we didn't know it wasn't supposed to sound like this, so we just let it run. And the look on Mom's face was trying to be, I mean, Mom would never hurt a flea, but she was trying to appreciate this, and this is what it sounded like. If I can, you know, I must have been, you know, 18 or so, and I had a great time with it, but... "Happy birthday, Margaret. Happy birthday," and on, just with the modulations like that. There wasn't a serious bit in it. And my mom just thanked him for it after. And I was grinning. I thought, but that was my... And so we've always remembered, and we sing to my mother, "Happy birthday, Margaret." But that was his offering. So, graduation ceremony. Oh my goodness, can you believe this? I asked her if she wanted to take part. Yes, go right ahead. Ah, yes, you do. Yes. Yes. And my... although I could hear my mom's frailty in that singing, and it breaks my heart when I hear it. But yes, she sang happy birthday to Greta on the machine. A graduation ceremony, the music. What is the most commonly, I don't know if they play it now. Actually, they pick more contemporary songs now. But I graduated to Pomp and Circumstance by Elgar, right? That was the traditional. But, team sports, cheers, songs. I remember my junior high song, Sarasota Junior High, Colors White and Blue, ooh. Sarasota Junior High, Oh How We Love You, ooh. And that was sung with great gusto at my junior high. But you probably remember singing at your football games and your school songs and that sort of. So music became a part of that. Music has been a part of funerals, of commemorations of death and dying for millennia. And sometimes the culture will have a very minor sad song. New Orleans will march with a gospel celebratory band with life, and there's different instrumentation for that. One would be called a lament, and sometimes to hear a lone bagpipe playing a lament is a very stirring for some. And I'm going to be mentioning this later. Some people can't abide the sound of a bagpipe. There is an instrument I can't abide the sound of, but when I said this some years ago here, I was met by a professional player of it in the congregation, so I'm not ever sharing that I don't like that instrument anymore. But there may be something you don't like. And to get very serious about it, war. War has issued a lot of music. Music has been used, the pipe and drums, the fife and drums, the little drummer that would advance ahead to give courage to the troops. The taps, we just heard taps the other day, that after all our Remembrance Day services, there's that music. And so many wartime songs, from Vera Lynn to White Cliffs of Dover, that remembering and the sorrow and the missing, and some of the old songs, I'll Take the High Road, You Take the... were about other unrest in countries, and it was turned into music. Campfire songs, songs around the campfire. I can name you the kind of sing-along songs we sang as youth. When I hear the music that many of the young people, I can't believe I'm saying that, many of the young people today are listening to, I don't know what they're going to sing around a campfire. Like, we would sing a folksy kind of everybody knows it sort of song. So they have to come up with their own roasting marshmallows songs around a campfire. And you may have some songs in your family that are distinct to your family. The songs that you would always know your father would love or your mother would love, and you may not have loved it, but the songs... and then we had a... This is how I thought you died. This is how I thought death was going to be. When I was very young, my mom and my dad and my sister at the table, we would hold hands, and we would sing... at the end of the meal, holding hands at the table, holding hands at the table, all the family together. And we would sort of go like this. And I honestly, in my little head, thought that's how we would just go to heaven. Just holding hands at the table, all the family together. And that was a beautiful, beautiful, I wasn't scared of it. It was lovely. It was fine. We would go that way. I found out things later, but I still treasure that idea of holding hands at the table. My mom has a little song she would sing to us. I had a lot of asthma. I was sick. I was a sick little puppy for much of my growing up days. The doctor said I would never be normal. I was just giving that to you. If you've ever had asthma, it can get very scary as a youngster. That you're breathing, you're pulling in the breath, and it's hard. And my mom would sit by my bed and tell me stories and stories so that I was hearing her voice and not the wheezing. And my dad would be in the kitchen with a hammer cracking ice up to bring to both me and my sister, because you wouldn't want to leave out the unsick one. And so she thought ice at 2 a.m. was a treat, which hardly anybody would think these days, but it was put that way. And the song was, oh my, my, oh my, my, oh my, 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 oh my, my. No words. No words. My mom would sing that to me, and it would immediately calm me and whatever. One time she was in the hospital for cancer, and she'd been taken out of her room and taken down for a test. You know when the porters take you someplace and you're in the bowels of a hospital and they leave you all alone and you're waiting by an elevator? And I came to the hospital to visit mom, and I didn't know where she was, and finally I found my way. And so I'm in the basement. I see my mom way at the other end of a hall, looking frail and alone and in a wheelchair. And so I started whistling, oh my, my. And so she heard it down the hall. And it was so that music, I hadn't got there yet, but the music was saying, I love you, here I am, you're not alone. So, and I also wrote three songs for my family. I wrote a song for my father that praised him to the sky and ended with, could I please borrow the car? And then I wrote a song about my mother, who, as I mentioned, wouldn't hurt a flea. And the verse was complaining about the horrible treatment my mother gave me all the time. And the refrain was, but I'll always love my mother. And she hated that song, but I would sing it for company and all the play. I've sung it all over the place about my mother. And then my sister, I put a song together praising her for all her wonderful qualities, but ending with, to me, which is her Achilles heel, because it ends with, says, my sister was beautiful, lovely, and always right. But it was in such a melodic way, it sounded like a compliment. But I had just stuck it in there because I was her brother. So that's what songs can mean to us. And there can be a song also that hits you with a heartache. And that song brings up a difficult time. I mean, the breakup songs. How many breakup songs are there in the world? And sometimes it's comforting, and sometimes it's heart-ripping and heart-wrenching. There are billions of pieces of music. And there are really only 13 notes. But there are billions of pieces of music. But I've already said something wrong, because that was said as a piano player. 13 notes. But you know, if you're a violinist, you can move between those 13 notes and slide up the string and hit many other notes that aren't on the piano. So there's more than that. And then there's my narrow-minded snobbery, which I happily confess to you. There's minor chords and there are major chords. Minor scales and major scales. I will just demonstrate for you. This is major. Happy, right? Happy. This is minor. Very sad. Lament. Sorrow. Except if you happen to disagree with me. Because for some people, the minor key is the rich and deep and meaningful way to play a piece of music. Half the happy folk songs of Eastern Europe are in the minor key. I just heard an entire concert played by the duo Black Violin a couple of days ago. And I was very sad throughout the whole concert because every song they played, a violin and a viola, was in the minor. I was very sad. And I thought, how could they come? And there must have been 4,000 people there in the amphitheater. And they would make them all cry because it was so sad. Except that everybody was getting up and jumping and clapping and bouncing up all of, they were having a ride. It was a wonderful, happy time. And they shouldn't have been. Because it was in the minor key. Because to me, and that's one of the biggest things we need to say about music, to me, that was sad. But to everyone there. Now, you know, when everyone else disagrees with you, it's very hard to hang on to your rightness. And this was like 4,000 people disagreeing with me. So I lost my rightness quite quickly. But that's taste, and we'll get into this in a second. And then when we say, well, it all comes down to one single note, just a note, one note. So if I played one note of the piano, I'm not even just playing one note. Because if you ever come up and look, which you're welcome to do, there are many, many strings in this beautiful piano here. Many, many strings. And there's many, many note Cs. Many Cs.
that I could play. And mainly all of it. And as soon as I hit one note, it plays three strings. A hammer comes down on three strings and plays those three strings. And any piano tuner will tell you they're not exactly the same. Not exactly. There's frequencies involved in that. And that one note sends off frequencies which set other strings to humming. And so you will never be hearing just one string. You're hearing the resonance, which is why it sounds even... The better the piano, the bigger the soundboard, you're hearing that resonance from all those different notes. We had a quartet here once playing wind instruments, and they said the same thing. Kathy said the same thing to me, that the note can be off by a 1/3,000th of a frequency, and they want it that way because that makes the sound richer. And this is all mathematical. I have a whole book on the mathematics of music. And I have read the opening chapter 45 times, and that's as far as I've gotten. But I keep it because it looks very good to have a book on the mathematics of music when you play what I do. And then there is loud and soft. Loud and soft. That instrument is called the piano, which means soft, which is very funny because it's also considered, oddly enough, along with drums, to be a percussive instrument because it has hammers that hit down on the strings. Now, they are softer than the harpsichord, if you can picture harpsichord music, which is very harsh. And so that was the first instrument, and when the piano was invented, because it was softer than the harpsichord, they called it a soft. Softer, so they called it the piano. So if you're looking at choral music and you see the little word, the little letter P in over a music, it means play softly. PP means play softer than that, and PPP means very soft on a piano, which is actually called soft. So again, I'm raising that. This is just musical food for thought. I'm raising it because it's relative. You might not think a piano is soft, but it's softer than the harpsichord. Now, if you drive a car, you may have presets on your radio. And I'll bet in this bunch, there's probably some commonalities in the presets. But there would also be things that... Now, I asked for a car, when I bought a car, I asked for a car that would not have a preset for country western music. Like, I didn't want a button that would, by mistake... play this, but they didn't have one. But and again, that's that musical snobbery. There are more genres of music now than 100 years ago could have thought, and I'm going to ask you to bear with me for a moment. Taste has exploded. There is art punk, alternative rock, college rock, crossover thrash, crust punk, experimental rock, folk punk, goth rock, grunge, hardcore punk, hard rock, indie rock, lo-fi, new wave, progressive rock, punk, shoegaze, steampunk, acoustic blues, Chicago blues, classic blues, contemporary blues, country blues, delta blues, electric blues, ragtime blues, baroque, chamber, chant, choral, classical, crossover, early music, expressionist, high classical, impressionist, medieval, minimalism, modern composition, opera, orchestral, renaissance, romantic, jingles, TV themes, alternative country, American bluegrass, contemporary country, country gospel, country pop, honky-tonk, outlaw country, traditional bluegrass, traditional country, chill step, deep house, dubstep, electro house, electro swing, exercise music, future garage, glitch hop, glitch pop, grime, hardcore, hard dance, house, jack and house, bop, lounge, swing, down tempo, and I haven't even started the list of the genres. A whole list of Latin, a whole list of pop, a whole list of rock, a long list of rock, soundtrack music, vocal music, world music. Something for every taste. You may have not even heard of some of this music, but they could be diehard fans of it, and that's what they love. So, I'll just give you a little bit of theory, and then a little bit of application, and send us to our Canada Day lunch. Music is defined as a form and cultural activity, a cultural activity that organizes sound in ways to share. That organizes sound in a way to share it. The ancient Greek said music was sound organized horizontally as a tune and vertically as the harmony that comes under it. So horizontally the tune, and the parts are the part under that. Some forms of music have been criticized as not being music. They're not music. Early jazz in the beginning of the 1900s was the saxophone was not considered a legitimate instrument when it first came out because it didn't fit. There are hardcore punk when it came out was not, but neither was Beethoven's Grossfuge String Quartet in 1825. That's not music because someone didn't think it fit with what should be music. Music is made up of pitch. And if it wasn't for pitch, you wouldn't know what music was. Pitch is the sound of that note compared to that note. And if there wasn't any comparison, you wouldn't be able to sing anything other than one note. But because you can hear those different notes, that's the music. It's also made up of rhythm. And the rhythm of music, which I was watching that night, where all the songs were in the minor, but everyone was jumping around because of the rhythm was exciting everybody. There's the tempo, and there's also the meter. And you would know, if you know nothing about music, you would know when you are seeing a march in 4-4 time versus a waltz in 3-4 time. And the other thing that splits people, and I've done it here and was rightly reprimanded for it by my dentist, who came up to me after and spoke harshly to me. If you know him, he doesn't speak harshly at all. But in four beats, if a piece is in four beats, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. If you're older, you will tend to clap like this. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2. There's nothing wrong with that. It makes sense. It's on the beat. 1, 2, 3, 4. You look a little old when you're doing it. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. And what is called the backbeat or the offbeat is what puts a little swing to music. So if you're a little younger, it's really got nothing to do with age. It's been around from time immemorial. You will clap differently. You will clap 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. So I thought we should try that just as a group together. And this will indicate how old you are to you. No, it won't do that at all. Excuse me. But let's do on the on beat. So we're going to clap 1, 2, 3, 4 together. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. Hey, you just grew younger. There was a beautiful idea called the music of the spheres. I just want to draw your attention to that for one moment. Pythagoras, this is legend, was walking by a blacksmith shop. And he heard the pounding of the hammer on the anvil and what it was shaping. And he saw that different hammers and different shaping materials being shaped made a different sound. And he was intrigued by this, came up to it. This is in ancient Greek times. And he noticed that the length of the hammer affected the sound. And the size affected the sound. And he put this together, and he was doing a lot of work on the planets and the stars. So he came up with this idea, and part of this is legend, that of course the size of the planets and the distance away would make different sounds. And they put together this whole idea. It's been in poetry, it's been in words, about the music of the spheres. And if you YouTube it now, they have, from the Hubble telescope, they will let you listen to the sound of the different planets. That they actually been recorded as making sound. Now, of course, back way before, they thought this was a heavenly design, that there was harmony in the universe because of these different sounds. And so because there was harmony out there, we were to match it. We were to match the music of the spheres. And the last thing I'll tell you before we apply it is that the word music, they believe, comes from the idea of the muses. In ancient Greek times, the muses were, I think they were all women, and you'll see them on carvings. And they were to stand for every aspect of poetry and art and beauty and music. And so one of them, Cleopatra, was deemed for lyrical poetry and music. And that's where the word came from. So it was always thought of as that most precious, beautiful idea. So now, theory. How many of you have ever taken lessons of any sort of music? Music lessons? Okay. How many enjoyed that? Oh, very good. I didn't. I hated it. And how many had to take theory with it? Rudiments of theory, a little black, blue, green, but in harmony. Oh, yeah. How many enjoyed that? I'm impressed. I'm impressed. But what she's saying is very true. She said it's very logical. The elements of music are very logical. They're put together logically to make sense so that anyone could work with it. And there's rules to follow. And I'll tell you a little bit about that in a moment. They teach you about melody, how to construct a melody. There's ways and there's ways. And then they teach you about harmony. If you went on to take harmony, which I think was the green book, you would learn how to structure notes under notes to make a richer sound. And then there's musical texture. The texture of a music, the difference between a solo flute and a full orchestra, or a chamber music with four strings and a rock band. They may be even playing the same piece, but they've textured it different. They've made it different like that. And then there's someone that can take a piece that everybody knows and arrange it. And I'm saying all these words on purpose for what I'm wrapping up about ourselves. There's taking something that's already set and arranging it and making it something new that it wasn't quite before, but you're using someone else's creativity to make more creativity. And then there's interpretation. I would interpret Beethoven differently when I was practicing piano. And my parents had to continually remind me that he might have known what he was doing when he put that piece together. And I would say, that's fine, but I like this. And they would always stress, you have to learn to do it right before you can play around with it. So that was what was stressed very much. But interpretation. Greta and I will hear the same, we'll see the same piece of art on the wall. And she will go, oh, that's so comforting and beautiful and restful. And I'll say, that's scary. That's a scary picture. And she looks at me like, how in the world could you interpret that pastoral, beautiful scene as scary? And I'm looking at her saying, how could you hang that in our house? I'd be scared to go in that room. I'm exaggerating only slightly. But interpreting is also to take a song and interpret it your way. No one can call it wrong because it's how you see it. And the last little bit is improvisation. Which means you take a tune and you riff around it and add the notes. Have you ever listened, if you've listened to really genius improvisation, it blows your mind how they can go their way around a tune and then come back to it and weave in and out. So, I give you a small poem. In you have to, I think, know that the person mentioned in the poem was an illustrious, known all over the globe, monarch. Okay. Oh, life is a glorious cycle of song, a medley of extemporanea, and love is a thing that can never go wrong, and I am Queen Marie of Romania. I have loved that for many, many years. Life is a glorious cycle of song. Well, the cycle contains a whole lot in it. If you would, can you name a song that has meant a lot to you in your lifetime? Little days, middle days, old days. A song that has really meant something to you. Can we have a song? I know there's so many. So think of an old song. Unforgettable, Desperado. I'm sorry? Well, I'll do it my way. And we could actually, we won't, but we could say, how come? And it might, you might like the song that someone has just named. It might mean something different to you. At different points in your life, songs will mean something to you, and you'll remember them. If you were to take some songs and put them back, and if we put your life right in front of you right now, and I said, compose a soundtrack. Compose the soundtrack to that movie. How would you put music to your life? And I hope it would contain some of the deepest laments. I hope it would contain music that would break our hearts because your heart has been broken. And that music would play in the background of that event and help us understand what it was for you. And without the music, we might not see that event the same way as you did. But when you chose the soundtrack, you told us what it meant to you. And that's very precious. And if we only bring our own perspective on someone's life, and we don't know, for instance, what soundtrack is playing in there, in their heart about that, as I've said before, Hallmark has two different kinds of cards. One is giving sympathy for you in your divorce, and the other is congratulations on your divorce. You see, because you might assume someone's sad about something and they're actually happier than they've ever been, or vice versa. So the soundtrack of your life. And I hope that there would be the part in the soundtrack where John Williams would have to come and play something so tremendous because it was so wonderful for you. And again, we might have looked at that part of your life and not realized how important and big that was for you till we heard the music. Sometimes when the music is playing in the movie, it's the music that's actually telling you the richness of what's happening in that song. And if the composer, and many of them do, will have a theme song for a different person in it or a different aspect of the what's happening in the movie, the music almost gets to you first. Something bad's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen. I can tell because the music has turned. Or, I'm going to cry. I know they're going to make me cry in a second because that violin is coming in and something like that. So I hope your soundtrack would contain deep laments to honor the sadnesses in your life, the losses. And they may be still playing. They may not just be about the event back then. This soundtrack may be still playing. You may not hear it all the time, but something in your day reminds you of that loss, and there's that music of lament. And I hope it's full of ecstatic celebrations. And the last point is that, who's writing your soundtrack? That's you. Who's writing the song of your life is you. You are writing the tone, the pitch, the rhythm. The trouble is other people are writing their songs too. And sometimes their music clashes with your music. And sometimes their music blends beautifully with your music. And sometimes you think it's a clash, and later on you realize, oh, that was the kind of music I didn't understand yet. And all of a sudden that person fits a little better than it did before. And sometimes the music is so dissonant, you have to say, that doesn't work anymore. That I've tried, I've listened to that, I've worked it through, and it doesn't work. And that may end up being a lament, and it may be a strengthening. There's music that can inspire and encourage us. So sometimes a wrong note isn't wrong. It's just very different. And we get to choose whether we incorporate that. So the last idea is, so improvise. How many of you have had to do something different than you thought you were going to be doing? Yeah, of course. And that means you're writing this beautiful song. You're writing this gorgeous song, and that's your life, and you want it to be this way. And all of a sudden, someone else's song, or the song of the earth, could be a hurricane, could be anything else that moves in, and say, oh dear, I can't play my song anymore. They've ruined my song. Isn't there a song about someone, that's right, that one too. Someone left a cake out in the rain. That song went on for entirely too long. But don't think that I could. But it was another one. Someone wrecked my song. You wrecked my song. And there's the, okay, then I don't have a song because you just wrecked my song. And the challenge would be, and I think what we do here for each other is, well, then improvise. Improvise. It's still your song. It's still your song. Even when it's been affected by somebody else and it laments, it has a lament in it. So to learn from other people's songs, I have never learned much from people that agree with me. I just feel really good. But I haven't learned much from them. But when someone brings a different, I mean, sitting through that concert, I walked right out and said to Greta, oh my goodness, I just learned something really important about how narrow I am in this area and how I would have never never understood and championed that kind of music to bring out that kind of joy. And it did. So always learning. And then sidle up with someone else. If they're in a lament, you can find a lament in you to be with them. You can find notes that lament with. And if someone says, well, dude, that's our time of need, lament with. And if someone is celebrating, even if it makes you not comfortable that they're celebrating that, but to bring a song of joy with them so that our music can blend and become even more beautiful. And when I said about the texture and the timbre, all the notes that can sound different. The reason timbre means that all the instruments in the orchestra are playing the note A, but they all sound different because they're a different instrument. So when we are all singing the note A, we are all different singing it. Do you recognize most people's voices when you hear it? I was just talking about this the other day. Billions of voices. And someone, I phoned Gene, and I said, I'll tell you what I said. I said, is this the most wonderful welcome reader in the universe? And she hung up on me. No, she didn't hang up on me. She actually humbly said she thought there were a few more that would be just as good. But she recognized my voice right away. You did. And then I recognized hers. Of course, I had phoned her, so I had less people to pick from. But there's certain people you do recognize, just even the timbre of our voices, and there's our personality. So all together, when we sing, we're different, and we're singing together. So I leave that. I'm just going to play a little bit of mixture of that as we think about that. And again, I hope your soundtrack is rich. Each other's lives and of our country. Go with me.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.